Board is now in session. Please be seated.
Good afternoon. Council ready to proceed?
I am, Your Honor. Good afternoon, Chief Justice Steele, Justice Holland, President Judge Vaughn. May it please the Court, I am Rick Miller. I'm with the law firm of Ferry, Joseph, and Pierce. With me at counsel's table are David Ferry, my partner, and our associate, Stephen Weiler. I represent the petitioners in this matter, who are the appellants in this case, Lawrence and Joseph Capaldi. I reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Unless the Court had any specific questions concerning the facts of the case, I was going to proceed directly to argument. My clients filed this petition for instructions to, among other reasons, resolve a deadlock among the trustees of the trust at issue and to restore independent management to the trust and the trust chief asset of the corporation which owns the Independence Mall on Concord Pike. Following 6 days of trial, the trial court issued a ruling which granted much of the relief that was sought by my clients. For the purpose of this argument, I am going to focus on one specific aspect of the Vice Chancellor's decision. That is what my clients consider to be his contradictory rulings denying my client's application for attorney's fees and expenses and granting the attorney's fees and expenses that were incurred by Mr. Capano.
Mr. Miller, in that regard, let's assume that your client did confer a benefit. Is it your position that they are then entitled to attorney's fees as a matter of law, or is it still discretionary?
I think that, Justice Holland, that the Court of Chancery always retains discretion if the facts are extraordinary in one reason or in one way or another, that the conferring of a benefit may not always lead to an award of fees.
Well, I ask that because the three issues you raised on appeal, you said the standard of review is abuse of discretion for each of them. And I just wanted to make sure that I really understood your argument because it read slightly differently. But I ask this before you get into your argument because to the extent it was still discretionary, what you seem to be saying is if you look at how the judge exercised his discretion in awarding fees to Capano, symmetry, if nothing else, requires that attorney's fees be awarded to your client who conferred the benefit.
Well, that's absolutely correct, Your Honor. That is the essence of our argument, that there was an arbitrary decision on the part of the Vice Chancellor to take a case which is really a case of co-trustees that have lost the ability to work with one another. Two of those co-trustees initiated an action, prosecuted successfully, and do not get their fees awarded, whereas the respondent, who defends the action, defends the status quo, which at the time was he was in charge of running things. He is, for most, I think, from an objective point of view, the unsuccessful party, and he gets awarded his attorney's fees. And I think that's the essence of the Vice Chancellor's decision. So I do see a lack of symmetry, to use the Court's words, between a decision to deny my client's fees and to grant Mr. Capano's fees. One thing that I think that the Vice Chancellor really failed to do, and this sort of segues into what Your Honor's question was concerning the benefit conferred. The benefit conferred has its place largely or often where a beneficiary of a trust is bringing a case. I think a trustee is on somewhat different grounds. I don't think a trustee always needs to even show that a benefit was conferred in order to receive an award of fees. And a good example, I think, would be the McNeil case, where the trustee was awarded its fees even though it was surcharged and removed. I think what happened, what we see in our jurisprudence that touches on an award of counsel fees in the trust litigation context is a differentiation between a trustee that is involved in litigation as opposed to a beneficiary. Now, in this case, I submit that my clients have shown both. They have shown a benefit to the trust. And if they were just beneficiaries, if they were nothing more than beneficiaries, I would say they still should have had their fees awarded by the court. Because the relief that the Vice Chancellor decided to award in this case did confer a substantial benefit. The Vice Chancellor went through in his ruling on the bench and made several comments about why he did not feel Mr. Capano was in a position to run this trust by himself, and why it was necessary to install a new independent trustee structure that would take away, or it would essentially take away, Mr. Capano's ability to act unilaterally. That was relief that the Vice Chancellor thought was necessary. And because of that, I think that even if my clients were nothing more than beneficiaries, that they have shown a benefit to the trust, and under, I think, fairly well-established jurisprudence, should be awarded their counsel fees for that. But on top of that, my clients are also co-trustees with fiduciary duties owed to the trust to make sure the trust is administered in a proper fashion. And I would refer the court to then Vice Chancellor, now Justice Jacobs' opinion in the McKinley Trust case.
Well, to help us sort out a couple of factual findings that the Vice Chancellor made, one statement relates to the award of Mr. Capano's fees, and he seems to justify that in part on the fact that Mr. Capano historically was not charging any fees as a trustee. He alludes to that. But on the other side of the equation, when he denies your client's fees, he says after everything's said and done, he thought they were primarily acting in their own self-interest. How do we deal with those two factual observations on appeal?
Well, opinion, my client's position, is that their perceived self-interest in the trust should not defeat their ability to be awarded counsel fees under either really logic or the law. If we look at the standards that have traditionally been applied to either trustees or beneficiaries who are seeking fee awards in trust cases, those standards usually, that I've seen, have not created an exception for litigants who are acting in their self-interest. And I would go one step further and suggest to the court, as a matter of logic, most litigants do act in their own self-interest, particularly trust beneficiaries. They're only there because of their self-interest, and yet they, if they can show that they have created the common benefit, are often to be awarded counsel fees in that context.
So and the benefit in this case would be that they successfully demonstrated, based on the Vice Chancellor's findings, that Mr. Capano had not exercised the best judgment on several occasions. And notwithstanding the fact that that exercise of less than the best judgment of the trustee didn't merit his removal, it did merit the appointment of independent trustees. So that's what your client accomplished.
Among other things, I mean, there was another benefit that was conferred. This case was also consolidated with the guardianship action over Mrs. Capaldi. And my clients also conferred a benefit by calling into question the salary which their sister, Ms. Richards, was charging to Mrs. Capaldi in order to care for her. And they showed that that salary was excessive, and the trial court agreed and ended up reducing the salary by, I think, approximately $25,000 per year, to where now it's only about $55,000 per year, I think is what the record shows. So that's another benefit that was conferred on, that doesn't go to the trust, though, that goes to Mrs. Capaldi. And that's something that, I mean, one of the things that I think my client's question about the Vice Chancellor's ruling is how, given the remedies that my client saw and the remedies that were granted by the trial court, how that supports the conclusion that they were only acting in their self-interest. But I'm not going to stand up here and deny that they weren't, that they didn't have self-interest, because they obviously did. And one of the reasons why we still pursue the argument that we would like to see Mr. Capano removed as a trustee has to do with my client's status as beneficiaries of the trust. They don't believe going forward that Mr. Capano, who is still going to be one of three trustees, is going to exercise his fiduciary duties toward them in an impartial manner. So, although my clients fully support the fact that the Vice Chancellor put this independent trustee structure into effect, the fact of the matter is they, perfect world, would still like to see Mr. Capano removed. And that's why we're still pursuing that remedy before this court. Justice Holland also asked about Mr. Capano's decision over the past few years not to draw a commission or salary from the trust. And that is certainly a factor that trial court was justified in taking into consideration. But at the same time, I think it's a reach to say that the record shows that Mr. Campano was not getting any benefit out of the position that he occupied.
Had your clients taken any commissions as trustees?
No. No, they have not taken any commissions as trustees. Getting back to, I was going to discuss the McKinley case with the court, and the relevance of that, I think, is that the McKinley case, I think, draws a distinction between parties who are litigating trust matters as trustees and those who litigate as beneficiaries. In the McKinley case, Justice Jacobs wrote that where a trustee brings or defends against a claim advanced for the benefit of the trust estate or its administration, the resulting litigation expenses are properly borne by the trust. And I think what we have here is the same thing. We have a case that is first and foremost about the administration of the trust. And it's brought by my clients who were trustees of that trust. They're not trustees any longer because they and their sister consented at trial to their removal. So they're no longer going to be involved in the trust going forward. But at the time they brought the case, they were two of four trustees in a hopelessly deadlocked situation. There's the trial court's decision to deny the petitioner's counsel fees, I think, contrasts with his decision to grant Mr. Capano's counsel fees. In granting Mr. Capano's fees, the Vice Chancellor concluded that Mr. Capano had been sort of dragged into this case involuntarily. I have no doubt, as I stand before the court today, that Mr. Capano would have preferred that my clients simply go quietly into the night and not avail themselves of the rights afforded to them in the legal process. that, of course, is not what happened. And I think what the trial court failed to recognize in awarding Mr. Campano his fees is how the regime he set up, where he really declared himself as the preeminent authority in this trust, caused this situation to blossom in the litigation. So I don't disagree with the Vice Chancellor that Mr. Campano did not want this case to happen, but I do disagree with the Vice Chancellor when I think that he should have taken a closer look in his decision at how Mr. Campano and how he treated my clients was responsible ultimately for this litigation. In the end, the impact of the trial court's decision, the trial court's ruling on fees in this case comes down to this. Co-trustees who avail themselves of the legal system and successfully prosecute a case that overturns the status quo are essentially penalized. Whereas a co-trustee who assumes control of a trust and who defends the case, defends the status quo, but is unsuccessful in his defense, gets awarded counsel fees. And my clients submit that that is not an equitable resolution of this case. Unless the court has any questions, I'm going to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Chief Judge Steele, Justice Holland, Chief Justice Steele, Justice Holland, President Judge Vaughn. My name is Adam Bailick. I represent Joseph L. Campano. Connection with this matter, I have with me Joanne Ceballos as co-counsel. I have 15 minutes, and then the remainder of the time will be given to Mr. Cross on behalf of his client. Staying on the issue that Justice Holland asked questions about, which is the attorney's fees issue, as a starting point, the statute makes it clear that the Court of Chancery has the discretion to award or not award attorney's fees, but it's not mandatory. And this court, in the McNeil case, which was decided in 2002, reinforced the fact that it is, in fact, a discretionary decision. And in the McNeil case, this court set forth three factors that the Chancery Court can consider, although on my reading of the case, that's not an exhaustive list. It's just three that were suggested. Interestingly, the McKinley case, which is cited by the appellant, was decided close in proximity to the McNeil case, but afterwards. And in that case, Vice Chancellor Jacobs cited two of the reasons that the court had set forth in the McNeil decision, but apparently did not consider the third or any others. The appellants in this case argue that Vice Chancellor Strine was mistaken, and it's important to remind the court, as the court well knows, but to state that the standard of review here is whether or not Vice Chancellor Strine, in deciding to award attorney's fees to Mr. Campano and deciding not to award attorney's fees to the appellants, abused his discretion. Although the appellants talk about some of the factors that Vice Chancellor Strine had before him and considered in connection with his award or his decision not to award attorney's fees, it is important, I think, to understand the context of Vice Chancellor Strine's decision. What Vice Chancellor Strine knew was that this case, the case that was filed before Vice Chancellor Strine, was filed on the heels of a case that had been previously filed by the appellants in which the appellants were seeking to have a guardian appointed for their mother and to have not only a guardian appointed for her person, but one for her property. That case resulted in a settlement and a stipulated order that called for substantial attorney's fees to be borne by the estate of Mrs. Capaldi. On the heels of that stipulated settlement, there was a second filing resulting in this case, which originated as a petition for instructions but evolved into a petition to seek the removal of my client as a trustee. The court heard 6 days of testimony at which all of the beneficiary/trustees testified at length. And the court's conclusion, after hearing all of the evidence, was that the appellant trustees were interested in their own monetary interests above the interests of the trust. And in fact, although at the filing of the case, the appellants were opposing their removal as beneficiaries, I think it's important to note, their removal as trustees, it's important to note that by the end of the case, they had essentially abandoned that position voluntarily before a court order and had agreed to step down, as had Ms. Richards. So to the extent that they now come before this court and say that they conferred a benefit on the trust because the court broke a deadlock, in fact, it was their voluntary agreement to withdraw as trustees that resulted in ending the deadlock. Importantly, when Vice Chancellor Stein issued his decision from the bench, he announced that he found that there may have been some benefit conferred to the trust as a result of the filing of this case. But what's important is the factual finding that he made, which is that any benefit that was conferred was incidental to the real motive for the filing of the case. I think the court's language is worth repeating. I believe that each of the siblings has acted primarily for their individual interests in the course of this litigation. To the extent there has been a benefit conferred, it's been wholly incidental and subordinate to their primary objective, which is benefiting themselves individually. And if you read, as I'm sure the court has read, the whole of Vice Chancellor Stein's decision, he weaves through it certain references to the motivation of the appellants and their self-interest. So, in summary, on the issue of attorney's fees, there is not an asymmetrical, respectfully, award here because discretion allows Vice Chancellor Stein to do exactly as he has, to find that based on the facts that attorney's fees should be awarded to Mr. Capano but should not have been awarded to the appellants. As to the issue of whether or not Mr. Capano was rightfully held as a trustee by Vice Chancellor Stein's decision, again, Vice Chancellor Stein spent the majority of his decision talking about the factors that he considered in allowing Mr. Capano to remain as a trustee. And some of those factors were the fact that he was the one trustee who was not motivated by any self-interest. It is clear from the record that although the appellants, in direct answer to your question, Justice Holland, didn't take any fees as trustees, they did take substantial sums of money from the trust. The evidence is uncontradicted in that while Joseph Capaldi was running the independent small, he took large sums of money in the form of loans, and similarly, Larry Capaldi not only took large sums of money from the mall in terms of loans that remain unpaid, but more egregiously, simply took money from the mall, and that was not determined until the bank that was then acting as a trustee did an audit and found that I believe there was about $160,000 that was unaccounted for. So whereas Mr. Capano has not profited in any respect from his service to the trust and has donated his time to the operation of the independent small, which in turn benefited the trust, the appellants don't have the ability to stand before this court and argue similarly. For those reasons, the facts upon which Vice Chancellor Stein relied in deciding that Mr. Capano should stay don't rise to a level that can be challenged as an abuse of discretion. In sum, on that point, you also have a new situation created by the appointment of two new trustees, which in one respect deals with a concern of Vice Chancellor Strine's, which was Mr. Capano's failure to conform to the technical obligations of a trustee. And I don't mean by saying technical to minimize those obligations, but obligations such as holding regular meetings and making sure that the beneficiaries are given proper notice. But the other issue that the appointment of two new trustees resolves is any issues that are raised by the appellant's brief as to Mr. Capano's duty to impartiality. We now have a group of trustees that will decide issues on behalf of the trust by majority vote. So there should be no concern about Mr. Capano continuing to serve along with the other trustees that have been appointed. Unless the court has any questions at this point, I'll step down and let Mr. Cross finish the time.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Richard Cross on behalf of appellee Rosanna Richards. I rise this afternoon and join in the arguments made by Mr. Bailick, and really only have a little bit I'd like to add. With respect to the award of attorney fees, I think the appropriate place to start is with the statute in question, which is 12 Delaware Code, Section 3584. Which provides, and I'll quote the language, in a judicial proceeding involving a trust, the court, as justice and equity may require, may award costs and expenses, including reasonable attorney fees, to any party to be paid by another party or from the trust that is the subject of controversy. And I think the initial question from Justice Holland was, would they be entitled as a matter of law or is it discretionary? And I think the position that I heard from the appellants was that in a situation in which a benefit is conferred, there is always discretion if there are extraordinary circumstances, which seems to be a higher standard than what the statute requires to deny attorney fees. In other words, the statute, a clear reading of the statute, gives the trial court the discretion to award attorney fees. And I think in this situation, and in this case rather, the court exercised that discretion, and it was not an abuse of its discretion to deny those fees. And the language that the court used in this case, which was on page 29 of the transcript attached to the opening brief, stated that the siblings will bear their own fees. I believe that each of the siblings has acted primarily for their individual interests in the course of this litigation. To the extent there has been a benefit conferred, it's been wholly incidental and subordinate to their primary objective, which is benefiting themselves individually. I think that is true of each of the siblings, which included my client. Their own inability to work together as siblings cannot be bootstrapped into a benefit to the trust. And so I don't believe that the trial court abused its discretion in this case. In fact, I think if there is a line to be drawn, I think this is a particularly good case in which to draw the line not to award attorney fees. And that public policy, if we were to look at it from a public policy standpoint, would suggest that in a case in which there is not self-interest on behalf of the party that brought the action, that would be, of course, the more appropriate case to award attorney fees in a situation where a benefit is concerned, because the party bringing the action was apparently doing so primarily for the benefit of the trust. So in this case, where the appellants were acting out of self-interest, a fact which the appellants concede, it was appropriate for the court to deny attorney fees.
So if you were writing the rule, as I think about what you just said, and you start from the presumption that American law says there is no award of attorney's fees except under certain circumstances, including where a statute authorizes it, and the statute says that the court may award fees where equity and justice call for it, when one tries to objectively determine when equity or justice would call for it, do you approach it from the point of view of first addressing whether the person who brought the litigation did so in part in their own interest, or do you approach it solely from the position that by, for whatever reason, the litigation was instituted, a benefit was conferred upon someone, and the person who or entity who received the benefit ought by right to pay for it, because that's the fair thing to do? Well, you seem to be suggesting that it's a two-step test, that first you determine what the objective was in bringing the litigation, and then and only then do you look whether, given that it was non-self-interested, whether there was a benefit conferred, and then if you can further conclude that the litigation actually conferred a benefit, you could award attorney's fees. Is that really what trust law is meant to say, and would that, if it is, be good public policy?
I'm not trying to make it as, I suppose, complicated as that. I'm not...
Well, maybe I am. Maybe that's the problem.
And, Your Honor, my time is up. I don't know if the court wants me to...
Oh, you get to answer my question.
Thank you, Your Honor. I don't believe that there should be a bright-line test in that regard. I think it is a situation in which the trial court must look at all of the facts and circumstances in a given case. And what I'm suggesting is that as an initial step, if we look at the statute, it does just give the court the discretion. And again, I'm not looking for a bright-line test, but I think in this particular case, the fact that there was a self-interest, as the appellants concede, that is a factor that goes against the award of attorney fees, and it's one factor that the court probably ought to consider. But I don't believe that there should be a bright-line test. But having considered it in this case, I think it's an appropriate determination.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I believe that just because a trial court has a discretion, that discretion is never unfettered. There are guidelines, rules, road signs for every judge to follow in deciding whether or not he or she is going to exercise that judicial discretion. To say that the statute says one thing and say, well, that means that the Court of Chancery could just make a decision in any way it wants, I don't think is accurate. We do have standards that are passed down to our common law.
So what do you suggest is the standard for the three of us who have to measure whether or not the way in which discretion was exercised here is an abuse of discretion? It always helps us to have a bright line rule because that makes our job easier. But how do we address the issue of whether the denial of an award here and then the grant of an award under the circumstances explained by the Vice Chancellor was or was not an abuse of discretion? What's our litmus test?
Well, I think, Your Honor, that the court should start with the benefit conferred. And when the court starts with the benefit that's conferred, there could be some weight because in some cases the benefit is just going to be tangential or the benefit is going to be minor. That's not the case here. I know the Vice Chancellor said it was an incidental benefit, but this was a real benefit. And one of the confusing things about the Vice Chancellor's decision is in the end he called this incidental, but this was a radical change that the Vice Chancellor made to this trustee structure. So when you start with the fact that there was a benefit that was conferred, I think it follows in most every case that person who brought the case is going to be entitled to charge his litigation expenses against the trust, because I think that's what equity dictates. And I think that is an appropriate discharge of judicial discretion. So I would have to disagree with my colleagues who think that the mere fact that you have a self-interest in a case is going to take that away. I mean, we could go through a myriad of cases where litigants come to court with a self-interest. In fact, they have to have a self-interest, otherwise they would not even be allowed to file their pleadings. Shareholder context is one. They confer a benefit among the trust, they share in that benefit, and yet they still qualify for fees. So I don't believe that the Vice Chancellor adequately explained in this case why my client's self-interest in this case defeats their right under normal standards to have their fees awarded. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Counsel.
Please rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All manner of persons having any